From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. This morning, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments related to President Trump's executive order ending birthright citizenship and that people born in the United States are automatically citizens. The order challenges the interpretation of the 14th Amendment and eliminates automatic citizenship for people born to non-citizens or temporary residents. It was quickly challenged and blocked by federal district judges. But the case before the Supreme Court today isn't really about citizenship, though. Rather, whether lower courts have the authority to issue nationwide injunctions to block presidential orders. And that could reshape the system of checks and balances between executive and judicial power. Leslie Gilo-Jacobs is a professor at McGeorge School of Law, and Kevin R. Johnson is a professor at UC Davis School of Law, and they join us now to break down today's oral arguments. Welcome to you both.
Thank you for having us.
Well, Professor Jacobs, I want to start with you. You were a law clerk at the Supreme Court. You've spent more than 30 years at McGeorge with a focus on the Constitution. So today's oral arguments before the court, they stem from Trump's executive order over birthright citizenship. But what is being argued today and the upcoming ruling doesn't really have anything to do with the 14th Amendment. Can you just walk us through the timeline of what happened, starting with that executive order on Inauguration Day leading to today?
Sure. And I'll point out, too, not only is constitutional law dear to my heart, remedies is, too. I've spent a long, long time teaching that. And so this combines both of those issues in one case. And so, yes, what we have here is what the Supreme Court is hearing is what we call an emergency order. And this stems from three cases that were filed right after the president issued his executive order seeking to modify the scope of citizenship and take away some birthright citizenship. And so in three different districts, the district courts heard emergency motions and then issued motions saying that the president could not enforce his policy, not only against the people who were in the case, but nationally, or we're going to call these universal injunctions. And so those were the decisions by the three district courts. They went up to the Court of Appeals. The three Court of Appeals affirmed that. There was one dissenting judge. And then it is now appeared at the Supreme Court in an unusual stance because the oral arguments for the merits cases, the ones that are final judgments, are over. But the court has agreed to hear an emergency motion by the president to narrow the scope of the injunctions that each of the lower courts issued. So the president is not challenging the underlying decision that he's likely to lose on the constitutionality of the birthright citizenship. He's arguing that the courts should have narrowed their injunctions. And by the way, they all said they weren't going to do that. And so the argument that the president makes is that the court should narrow these orders to the people who are suing. And in the case of states, it would presumably be the citizens in those states. So it wouldn't apply nationally. It would only be the people who are bringing the lawsuits. And so that's what the court was hearing today, is whether it's appropriate for district courts and then Court of Appeals here to affirm orders that apply to non-parties to the litigation. And I'll point out that this is an issue that's been percolating because these orders by the district courts have been increasing in the past number of decades. And so both President Obama and then certainly President Biden were subject to these universal injunctions and criticized them at the time. And so now we have this president also bringing a lawsuit and saying that they shouldn't exist.
Okay. So,
or that they should be modified in some sort of way.
Yeah. Okay. So in layman's terms, in the context of this conversation, an injunction is essentially blocking a presidential order.
It's a court order saying you can't do it. Stop it. Don't do your law. What the court has to find is that there's a likelihood that the law is unlawful.
And you just laid out historically, it isn't uncommon for judges to block or file an injunction or issue an injunction on a presidential order. But has this legal argument essentially been made before that a lower court judge shouldn't be able to make a ruling with an impact beyond their region, that essentially a district court judge shouldn't make a nationwide injunction.
Well, certainly legal scholars and commentators have been arguing back and forth for a number of years about it. But that's the significance of this case, is now it's queued up before the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court is addressing whether it should establish a rule or do away with entirely these universal injunctions, or the ability of lower courts, or I mean, maybe themselves, to be able to issue these nationwide injunctions. Mm.
So has birthright citizenship been taken head on at all? I mean, you mentioned that the president doesn't expect his executive order to stand. Why not just... Did I hear that correctly?
No. Certainly, they argue that it's absolutely constitutional and appropriate order. What I said is they're not raising that question before the Supreme Court right now.
Why
not? They're trying to segregate it. Well, because it's not an appropriate time for the Supreme Court to answer it. And maybe they're concerned about the answer that the Supreme Court would give. But they think perhaps that they're more likely to get a favorable ruling when they're talking about these injunctions and seeking a ruling on those. Hmm.
Professor Johnson, what struck you about today's oral arguments?
Well, what struck me about the arguments, one, their length. It was a two-hour argument in May, when arguments are usually ended for the term in April. And what struck me is how birthright citizenship did come up in the arguments, and it seemed pretty clear that some justices, especially Justice Sotomayor, thought that the executive order was patently unlawful. And it was clear also that what I thought would be a great deal of hostility toward nationwide injunctions didn't really materialize. There were some alternatives that were suggested, including what's called class certification under Rule 23, that would require a court, before issuing a broad injunction, to satisfy, show that a number of factors were satisfied. At the same time, Justice Jackson emphasized that we are enjoining the action of the president. It is that's the party who's covered by the injunction. So I was surprised by how there is little defense of the president's position on abrogating birthright citizenship, and how the justices, generally, not all of them, seemed open to some kind of way of allowing these universal or nationwide injunctions to remain in place in a case where the action was clearly unconstitutional. And I think that they're trying to figure this out. And this is actually, as Professor Jacobs mentioned, an incredibly important practical issue, because these kinds of nationwide injunctions have affected many presidents. And one that relates to this kind of case, an immigration case, is the nationwide injunction entered by a district judge in Texas, barring the Biden administration from taking any new deferred action for childhood arrivals applications after the Supreme Court's decision, which is basically gutted the DACA program. Made it shrink over time as people, there are no new applicants, no new recipients. And so it is in some ways a bipartisan concern. And the court and the justices seemed to be thinking about, well, how do we balance the fact that there may be some damage from these universal injunctions, but in a case like this, with a clear constitutional violation, can we really require individual actions to be brought with possibly inconsistent results, with it taking a good deal of time to percolate through the courts to get to us to resolve? Mm.
Professor Jacobs, same question to you. I mean, we're kind of just fresh on the heels of these oral arguments. What bubbles up to the top for you?
Well, I'm going to agree with Professor Johnson that the justices and you know, all across the spectrum did seem thoughtful about these universal injunctions and were probing the consequences of saying that district courts can't do them or of narrowing them. I will say, however, I expect that they will come up with some sort of ruling that does narrow the scope of universal injunctions. And the question is, what will that be? And so Professor Johnson was noting what one of the counsels was suggesting, which is if we're dealing with constitutional issues that are purely legal, then, and that's the challenge, as opposed to having to do facts with all the different people bringing a lawsuit, then maybe that's an instance where these injunctions are more clearly appropriate than in other ones. But there are a number of different ways that the Supreme Court could decide to limit district court's authority to issue these things. And that's what I would think that we're going to see. And then procedurally, then it would proceed along. And I don't think that we would see the court addressing the merits right away.
If the court rules in favor, maybe even partly, we don't really know, but in favor of the Trump administration's position, what kind of ramifications are there? How does this shape from the argument or the order surrounding birthright citizenship, the 14th Amendment, even beyond citizenship, if the court sides even partly with the Trump administration, Professor Jacobs?
Yes, well, in this particular case, it really does depend upon what they decide to do, because there was a lot of discussion among the justices about how quickly, if they said this particular type of remedy is appropriate, how quickly these same people bringing the lawsuits could go back into court and get a similar type of remedy. And so in that sort of instance, it would require them to do that, and they'd have to litigate it, and it would be, you know, take some time and be expensive. But potentially they would still get the same sort of remedy. And then again, whatever the terms are of the narrowing, it would absolutely apply to all sorts of other actions that this president is taking and that future presidents will take. That is, it would limit the authority of the district courts in whatever way the court says. I mean, what they may do is just one thing they said, which I thought was very interesting, is they said, well, district courts don't even listen to the tests that we articulate. And I think Justice Gorsuch said that. And so I think that's what they're thinking about, too. If they just come up with some new test, then they're going to be back in the same place. So, yes, it's going to affect all sorts of executive actions. And then it will affect the plaintiffs in this case. But I did get the sense, in the same way that Professor Johnson did, that one way or another, I think a majority of the justices think that these parties will be able to get, you know, some sort of alternative relief that's before final judgment, like this injunction, but not the same thing.
Professor Johnson, your expertise also includes Chicano, Chicanx, Chicana studies. How does the birthright citizenship, this executive order, fit into President Trump overall, his immigration enforcement policies?
Well, I think that this particular executive order is one of the more extreme versions of his immigration and nationality policies. It's pretty clear to most observers, including at least three courts of appeals so far, that an executive order ending birthright citizenship is unconstitutional. And it's not something that President Trump attacked head on like this in his first term. And I think that overall, what we see from the Trump administration is a full court press on all immigrants and how and treats them in poor ways in many different circumstances. I mean, we already have a wrongful deportation case that made its way up to the Supreme Court. We already have a novel, if not incredible and unsettling, use of the Alien Enemies Act of 1798 to deport without due process some migrants. We have a president who doesn't concede that due process protects people before they can be removed from the country. We have states being challenged for being different in terms of immigration enforcement than the federal government, and attempts to defund so-called sanctuary states. So I think that this birthright citizenship executive order fits all too well in with all the other parts of the immigration agenda of the Trump administration, which we will be living with for a long time, because whatever happens in the courts, the terror and fear generated in the immigrant community is going to affect generations of migrants, their children, their communities, and others. So to me, that's the biggest cost of all of this. And if the court comes up with some way of limiting universal injunctions, I think it's going to delay a resolution of many of these issues and constitutional violations, or something that the Supreme Court eventually finds is unconstitutional, may go on for a number of years with their impacts on communities, primarily communities of color.
Professors Johnson and Jacobs, thank you for the breakdown. It is a complicated case. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you for having us.
Leslie Gilo Jacobs is a professor at McGeorge School of Law, and Kevin R. Johnson is a professor at UC Davis School of Law. And we've been talking about the Supreme Court hearing oral arguments this morning related to President Trump's executive order on birthright citizenship and the power that lower court judges have to file universal injunctions to block presidential actions. Up next, Governor Gavin Newsom's May budget revision is projecting a $12 billion deficit, which the state has to close in about a month. We'll break down how the governor is framing the shortfall and what other factors could be at play. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.